And welcome to the Rick House. Cyrus Farmer here, and you are watching and listening to the Stomp the Tea podcast. Folks, it is Super Bowl week. It has finally arrived, and we're only a couple days away from the big game. So we are going to be getting into a preview of this year's Super Bowl on tonight's show. We'll be talking about Super Bowl 59. I actually went back and watched Super Bowl 57, the last time these two teams met for a world championship title. I'll give you some of the thoughts that I had about that game, as well as thoughts I have on the game coming up this Sunday as well. We're also going to be talking about jersey etiquette, jersey preferences. Do you have jerseys? If you do, do you wear them? If you don't, why don't you own jerseys? We'll get into all of that. And of course, everyone's favorite segment, what are you drinking tonight? But first, there were a couple things that I wanted to get into, touch base on with you, and find out what you're thinking about it, because I can tell you what I'm thinking about it. This past week, we kind of dodged a bullet, as it were. The Trump tariffs on Mexico and Canada were delayed for about a month, as far as we know. We don't know right now if President Trump is going to use tariffs as kind of a negotiating threat, or if he's going to be actually imposing tariffs on the lower end, higher end, or somewhere in between. But this reprieve that we received with products coming from Mexico and Canada should actually kind of give you a little bit of a heads up, as it were. Now, any item that has a tariff placed on it, as most of you well know, doesn't mean that that item will disappear from the shelves. If someone, let's say the United States decides to put a tariff on French wine, right? It doesn't mean that French wine will no longer be imported into this country. It just means whatever that tariff is, 5%, 10%, 25%, 50%, whatever that tariff is, there is a likelihood that whoever is paying that tariff to import that product is going to add whatever tariff they were charged onto the cost of that good. So, we don't drink a lot of tequila or Canadian whiskey here in this household, but we do from time to time drink our fair share of scotch, our fair share of Irish whiskey, our fair share of Japanese whiskey. You can go up and down the line. It's just a matter of time, folks, before President Trump either decides to threaten the European Union or Japan or Argentina, pick your country, or it's just a matter of time before he actually imposes tariffs on some of these other countries. So, why is this a good thing? Well, it's a good thing because now, with this kind of false start that we had with Mexico and Canada, now's the time for you, as good consumers, to start buying alcohol, whiskeys that you like from other countries that may be subject to tariffs. Now, of course, we're big bourbon fans around here, and bourbon, the original American spirit, essentially, isn't going to be affected by any of these tariffs because it is domestic. But I will be stocking up on some scotch. I will be stocking up on some Irish whiskey. I will be stocking up on some Japanese whiskey just so that I can actually get a $60 bottle for $60 instead of $85. Or a $100 bottle for $100 instead of $130. You get my point. So all I'm saying is, with this most recent example of a tariff possibly being put in place, plan ahead. Because here at Stomp the Tea, we like nothing more than value. We're big fans of value. So if you can buy a couple bottles a week, buy a couple bottles a week. If you can buy 5 bottles a week, buy 5 bottles a week. Just buy stuff that you think that may be subject to a tariff because it is not domestically made And you won't have to worry about any tariffs anytime soon, at least as far as whiskey goes. So that's my little public service announcement there. I have to tell you folks, I want to get into this Luka Doncic trade that happened with Anthony Davis. I have to tell you, I'm genuinely but pleasantly surprised at how much attention this trade has gotten. Look, I know Luka Doncic is a fantastic player. He's a lot of fun to watch. He's, in my opinion, and this is just my opinion, I mean, he's easily a top 10 player. I'm not sure I put him in the top five, but he's easily one of the top 10 players in the NBA. And yet, when he was traded for Anthony Davis to the Lakers this week, it was big, 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 big news. And I guess it should be big news because he did just take his team to the finals along with Kyrie Irving last year. He's a wonderful scorer. He doesn't play any defense, but his offensive gifts are almost unrivaled. But in addition to all of that, he's only 25. So the question I have is, why would you trade a guy like Luka Doncic, who is 25 years old? I mean, look, there are some great players in the history of sports that have been traded at several different ages, right? So I don't think Luka is unique in that regard. I mean, if Shaq can get traded, Luka Doncic can get traded. If Wilt Chamberlain can get traded, Luka Doncic can get traded. If A-Rod, Alex Rodriguez can get traded, Luka Doncic can get traded. But it was surprising to me how much genuine interest the trade actually generated. And I think good for him, good for them, good for the NBA. I think Anthony Davis is going to do well in Dallas. I think Dallas actually might make it back to the NBA Finals again. Not sure what's going to happen with Luka and the Lakers. Who knows how long he's going to actually play with LeBron and how well that actually is going to work, since they both seem to like to use they're both kind of ball dominant players. So we'll see. There's a theory right now that LeBron is really looking forward to playing off the ball and letting basically putting anyone they play into a pick and roll with Luka and have the defense try to pick their poison. Do they want Luka to score? Do they want LeBron to score? We'll see how that works. But I think if you're a Laker fan, you probably have to be very excited about this move. I think if you're a Dallas Maverick fan, I would keep your powder dry for now. This may not be the worst thing in the world for you. Again, Luka doesn't play any defense, but what he brings to you offensively is very hard to match. But if you're Dallas, you may not miss his offensive gifts as much as you will actually appreciate Anthony Davis's defensive gifts. And he can give you a little bit of offense to boot. I think Dallas is going to be a fun team to watch. You let me know how you feel about that. But I do. I think they're going to be a lot of fun to watch with Anthony Davis, Kyrie Irving, and the rest of that young squad they have. So I will be getting into the NBA starting next week after the end of the Super Bowl. So it should be a lot of fun. Anyway, speaking of the Super Bowl, what do you guys like to eat during the Super Bowl? What's on your Super Bowl menu? For me, I got to tell you, there's all sorts of classics, of course. Pizza, wings, nachos, of course, very popular. People have potato skins. People make brisket. People do all sorts of things. I'm not quite sure what we're going to do around here, but I do know one or two things that we're going to do. I'm trying to keep it simple, right? I really want to stay locked in on the game. I don't want to do a whole bunch of prep, and I don't want to do a whole bunch of anything as far as putting together these, cheese plates, these meat plates, these charcuteries, any of that stuff, right? This year, I want to take it off because I want to watch my Eagles get in there and try to win this game. So that being said, what am I going to do for our menu? Well, I have a couple things that I know for a fact that I'm going to do. One is I'm going to be doing a 7-layer dip. Now, I think a lot of you know what 7-layer dip is, but for those of you who don't, I'm happy to explain. 7-layer dip is kind of like, essentially it's Mexican food, right? Where you take a dip, you take like a casserole tray, like a Pyrex, you know, something you would bake a chicken in. And you lay out a layer of, and you can do this in any order that makes sense to you, but I'll tell you how I'm going to do it. You put down a layer of refried beans. Some people use black beans. On top of that, you put a layer of guacamole. On top of that, you put a layer of sour cream. On top of that, you put some tomatoes, onions, jalapenos, or, you know, long hots here in Philadelphia, black olives, shredded cheese, and that's essentially your 7 layers. So that when you have a chip, you dip it to the bottom of that layer, you come out with all of those things that you would want on a chip. And what happens is you make this casserole, you make this in kind of a casserole dish, and then when you're ready to eat it, you just scoop out a spoonful or two onto a plate with some chips, and then you eat it that way. I'm looking forward to it. I haven't had, say, a 7-layer dip in a long time. Haven't made one in a long time. So I think that's going to be great. The other thing I think we're going to do, because I can do it the night before, and it's going to be no fuss, no muss. We're probably going to make some oxtail. I'll literally buy them on Saturday. I'll sear them in a pan Saturday night, toss them in the slow cooker, and let them cook all day. They'll be ready for game time. It's going to be awesome. We like oxtail around here. From time to time, we have oxtail probably like, oh, 4, maybe 5 times a year. So that's what, just over every 2 months or so. So it's time. So I'm looking forward to that. So that will be on my menu. What is going to be on your menu? You guys let me know. Let me know what you think. Okay, on to the show. Super Bowl 59 preview. Folks, I got to tell you, I do not understand at all why some people are down on this game. I mean, this is going to be, in my opinion, it is going to be a very, not only competitive game, but it's going to be an exciting game. It's going to be a fun game to watch. I think this game is going to have its share of big plays on offense and defense. Look, I get it. If you are not a fan of the Kansas City Chiefs, if you're tired of seeing the Kansas City Chiefs win, if you're quote-unquote chiefed out, fine. That is your right. If you can't stand the Philadelphia Eagle fan base, I get that too. That is your right. That's fine. But why would you be down on the game even if you're down on the teams playing the game? I mean, in my opinion, this is not the Patriots playing the 85 Bears in that Super Bowl. It's not the New York Giants playing the Baltimore Ravens in 2000. I mean, it's not Neil O'Donnell versus Emmitt Smith's Cowboys. I mean, these were games that you went into, you being me, as a viewer, and thought, man, this is going to be a lousy game. It's very, very hard for me to get up for this game. I think this Super Bowl rematch is going to be the exact opposite. I think the game is going to be tremendous. So if you're down on the game, it's fine. I get it. But I can tell you one person who is not down on the game, regardless of the fact that I am an Eagle fan and believe they will win the game. If you take that out of the equation, I'm excited for the game. I think it's going to be a good game. I think it's going to be a fun game. I think it's going to be a great watch. So there's that. Now, folks, I went back and looked at Super Bowl 57, which occurred a couple years ago between these two very same teams, Kansas City and Philadelphia. And it's funny, when you rewatch a game that happened a couple years ago, it's funny how much you remember about the game, but it's also funny how much you don't remember, how much you forgot about the game. And that's why a rewatch is always valuable in some ways. you get a better sense. You know, they say the NFL is a year-to-year league, right? You hear so many coaches and players talk about the fact that, well, at the end of the season, whether you win the Super Bowl or whether you're eliminated with a 8-game losing streak, the last time you're in that locker room, you look around and you talk to each other because you know that team, that particular team, that season's team will never be together again. And that is definitely true. And we understand that philosophically. But when you go back and look at a game that just happened 2 years ago and see how many differences there are on some of these rosters, it really kind of drives that point home. I mean, I had completely forgotten, even though he'd only been there for 3 months or whatever, I'd forgotten that Ndamukong Suh was an Eagle. I mean, you forget about the fact that Javon Hargrave was playing defense for the Eagles during that Super Bowl. You forget about the fact that Legarius Sneed was a Kansas City Chief top corner, one of the best corners in the league. He would end up leaving for Tennessee, I think, this past year. There are just different players that were here then but are gone now. I mean, the punt returner this year is Cooper DeJean. Punt returner 2 years ago was Britton Covey for the Eagles. I mean, it's just amazing how much teams can change in small ways and in large ways. Rosters turn over. They just do. And it's interesting to see how different some of the key players are in these two lineups. So I thought that was interesting. You know, it was funny because in the first half, you know, the Eagles, you forgot about the fact, you being me, I forgot about the fact that in 2022, the Eagles scored 10 first drive touchdowns. They led the league, I think, in first drive touchdowns in 2022. They used to get out to a fast start and then basically run the clock down with their running game, whether it's Miles Sanders, Kenny Gainwell, Jalen Hurts. They would just run the clock out after they got these big leads. They would jump on teams early, and they've been the exact opposite this year. You almost forget that that's how the Eagles used to play is recently as 2 years ago. But I think that was largely a function of Shane Steichen's offense and Jalen being in that offense. This was his second year in that offense under Shane Steichen. So I think he had more command of it. He had more control over it. He had understood it a little better. And the Eagles were able to get out to these fast starts, use their running game and their offensive line to just basically milk the clock like crazy after they got up on you. And there would be nothing you could do because their offensive line is so good that they would basically out-possession you. And because the Eagles had a lead, they could unleash that defense, that front four, with Fletcher Cox and Javon Hargrave and Hassan Reddick. They could just pin their ears back and go after your quarterback from the second, third quarter on. And that's how they won a lot of games that year in 2022. I completely forget that because they haven't played like that in a long time. They started to play like that a little bit in the NFC Championship game against the Commanders, but we haven't seen that Eagle team in a while. I still don't understand why Miles Sanders didn't get the ball more. It was all Kenny Gainwell all the time. I think Miles Sanders had like 8-9 touches in the entire game, which makes no sense to me. Anyway, Jalen Hurts was very good in the game, Super Bowl 57, 2 years ago. As you've heard me say many times, he probably should have been the MVP of that game, even in a losing effort. He was so good, so spot on. And the funny thing about rewatching that game is, if you listen to the broadcast, this game was also broadcast by Fox, and it was Kevin Burkhardt and Greg Olsen calling the game. And every single time, and the Eagles did it probably about five, six, maybe seven times during the course of the game, every time they did the tush push, Olsen and Burkhardt referred to the tush push as the sneak. Oh, here's another quarterback sneak. Here's another sneak. It's funny. You forget. The tush push or the brotherly shove had not been coined yet. Some announcer had not actually, I think Al Michaels might have been the one who actually coined it last year at some point. But it was not in the lexicon of the broadcast team in 2022, 2 short years ago. People did not refer to what the Eagles do now as the tush push or the brotherly shove. They kept referring to it as a sneak, as a quarterback sneak. It's fascinating. Little thing, but I found it fascinating. Now, the game consisted of multiple long drives by the Eagles. I mean, the Eagles, they had so many multi-play, several-minute long drives that resulted in touchdowns that you kind of wonder how the score got to be what it got to be. I think the final score is 38-35 at the end of the day. Because Kansas City didn't have the ball very much. I think Kansas City might have had the ball like 20 minutes in the whole game. And it's not like they had, it's not like Kansas City had like Tyreek Hill on the field and they were like just throwing bombs left and right. Kansas City played well on special teams. They obviously had the one huge punt return in the fourth quarter. So that happened. But even with the Jalen Hurts fumble, and hang on, I'm going to actually silence my phone, put my phone on airplane mode so I don't get distracted here. Even with the Jalen Hurts fumble, right, that Nick Bolton picked up and scored a touchdown on, the Eagles came right back the very next drive and scored a touchdown. Quez Watkins dropped a pass at 6:13 in the third quarter where he's open and the ball hits him in both hands, would have put the Eagles down to about the you know, inside the 20. But Dallas Goedert ends up making a first down a play or two later, but the Eagles end up having to settle for three, which in some ways may have been where the game was lost. But all that being said, even after the Kadarius Toney punt return that led to a subsequent touchdown by Kansas City late in the fourth quarter, at 15, what was it? At with 5 minutes and 15 seconds left in the game, it was a 0-0 game. It was 35-35. Even after a couple of big missed opportunities from the Eagles, because the Eagles kept scoring, but Kansas City was able to take advantage of some of those, miscues that the Eagles made during the course of the game. That's how you get to 35-35. The problem was, at 35-35, with 5 minutes and 15 seconds left, Kansas City was getting the ball. That was the problem. So, it's interesting. I think what happens is, and I think what's going to happen, is that the Eagles are a different team. Obviously, I think the Eagles are going to win the game. The Eagles are a different team this year. I think they're going to rely heavily on their defense, keeping Kansas City in front of them. I think Pacheco and Hunt are very good runners. I don't think Pacheco is the runner he was 2 years ago. I don't think Kareem Hunt is the runner now that he was a few years ago. But I think Kareem Hunt can be a handle. He can be a load, especially in the red zone. So the Eagles are going to have to gang tackle. The Eagles are going to have to make sure they keep, the Kansas City backs wrapped up and bring them to the ground instead of just trying to hit them. I think if you're a Kansas City fan and you believe, even if you're not a Kansas City fan, if you believe Kansas City is going to win the game, you think that probably because Mahomes has been in this spot so many times, and more often than not, he has come through and made the plays needed to be made in order to win the game. And that is as valid a reason as any other for believing that Kansas City is going to win the game. Kelce doesn't have to be dominant in the game to make a timely play. We know Mahomes is going to pass, run, shuffle pass, shuttle pass, do all sorts of things, expected and unexpected, in order to make plays. I think the difference will be that the Eagles' offense is going to put Kansas City in a real bind. Look, we all know about Saquon Barkley. I think he's had a tremendous year. Now, what you may or may not be aware of, apparently Kansas City has not allowed a 100-yard rusher all season. I think maybe Derrick Henry had 100 yards in the first game of the year, but they didn't have any, but Kansas City hasn't allowed a 100-yard rusher since. That being said, I think they're going to have a hard time stopping the Eagle running game because you have to pick your poison. And I can tell you this right now. As much of a home run hitter as Saquon Barkley is, and he is a home run hitter. I mean, if the Eagles win the Super Bowl, you might want to start calling Saquon Barkley Reggie Jackson because he will have hit so many home runs in this postseason, you're going to have to start calling him Reggie Jackson. He's been that good. But even if you try to contain Saquon Barkley and say, okay, on the RPOs, make Jalen keep the ball. Let's key on Saquon Barkley. That's not a negative for the Eagles. Jalen Hurts, if you let him keep on RPOs, he might run you out of the building. I'm telling you, he is not the kind of quarterback who is going to run for 5 yards and you're going to be able to catch it. Jalen has multiple games during the course of his career where he's rushed for over 100 yards. I don't have the number in front of me, but it's happened more than once. I can tell you that. Jalen Hurts is a weapon. And if you decide to pick poison and the poison you decide to pick is letting Jalen Hurts run on RPOs instead of Saquon Barkley, then you are opening yourself up to a world of negative possibilities because not only will Jalen run it down your throat, he will pull it when you have to come up and stop him from running it and toss to one of our incredible receiving corps, A.J. Brown, Devontae Smith, Dallas Goedert. Look, I think if you're Kansas City, and I know Steve Spagnuolo is a fantastic defensive coordinator, but I think if you're Kansas City, you are going to be in a genuine bind when it comes to dealing with this Eagles offense. As undynamic a thrower as you may think Jalen Hurts is, if you watched the Super Bowl 2 years ago and if you watched the NFC Championship game against the Commanders that happened 2 weeks ago, we all know Jalen Hurts fans. We know that he's capable of throwing as well as anybody. He just doesn't do it consistently, and he doesn't do it every game. But in the big game, Jalen Hurts, he's always in attendance. Jalen Hurts is never absent in a big game. Now, he might not always win, but it won't be him not showing up. Jalen Hurts is going to show up, and he's gonna actually make some plays. I expect that. He's done it in the past. I expect him to do it on Sunday. So that's one of the main reasons I feel so comfortable about the Eagles' opportunities and their chances of winning this game. I think that Eagle defense is going to touch Mahomes. I think they're going to touch him often. I can't say that he's going to get sacked 15 times, but I think he will be rushed, hurried, and harassed throughout the game when he drops back. This Eagles team is, I think this Eagles team is probably, we don't know how good this team is. But I think after Sunday, we'll have a much better idea. I happen to think they are a very good team. And I think that that's a team, should they win on Sunday, that is going to be a problem for the rest of the National Football League for the next several years. So that remains to be seen. But I'm really, really looking forward to the game. Okay, folks, before we go any further, as always, I'd like to remind you to like, subscribe, do all the things that you would do to support any form of entertainment that you like. Tell your friends, tell your enemy, spread the word. Let everyone know that Stomp the T is here for you, because we are. And we're here providing you interesting content that will go a long way towards making the passing of your week more enjoyable. All right, so there's that. Now, we'll talk a little bit about jerseys, right? Sports jerseys. I don't know, for a long time, I believe that, you know, after a certain age, you kind of age out of being able to wear jerseys. Not being able to, but I believe that after a certain age, you kind of age out of wearing a sports jersey on a Tuesday, or you know, to a friend's house for a party on Saturday night. You know, I think that's more of a young person's fashion trend. I only have a couple jerseys myself these days. But I do wear the jersey of my team whenever they are in a championship setting or when they are in a game that determines whether or not they go to the ultimate championship setting. So in football, it'll be the NFC championship game. I'll wear a jersey. For the Super Bowl, I'll wear a jersey. Baseball, I'll wear a jersey for the ALCS. I'm a Yankee fan. And for the World Series, of course. And for the NBA, I would wear a jersey during the Eastern Conference Finals. I'm a Knicks fan. And I'd wear, of course, a jersey for the NBA Finals. So that's usually, for me, when and where I choose to wear jerseys. I mean, if I had to buy, I'm thinking about it now. If I had to buy a jersey from this Eagles team, whose jersey would I buy? It's interesting. The jersey that I have now is a DeSean Jackson jersey, number 10, former wideout great for the Eagles. The other jersey that I own is a baseball jersey. It's a New York Yankee Derek Jeter jersey. It's the road gray with New York across the chest, two on the back. Obviously, no names on the back. You just know Yankee players by their numbers. But if I were to buy a jersey from this 2024 Eagles team, whose jersey would I buy? It's interesting. I've always thought that I would look funny, and I haven't done it, but I always thought that I would look funny if I were wearing the number of a offensive or defensive lineman. You know, I've always thought like I would probably look funny in a Fletcher Cox jersey, right? A Reggie White jersey. I would look funny in a Jason Kelce jersey, I think. Maybe I would, maybe I wouldn't. I think I would. So I've always tended to gravitate towards receivers, running backs, defensive backs. Occasionally a quarterback, occasionally a linebacker, but that's pretty much it. So with that being said, I think I would probably, I can tell you right now, there are two jerseys that would be in the running for me for this current Eagles team. One, number 11, the jersey of A.J. Brown, our wonderful wide receiver. Big fan of his, like the way he plays the game. Tremendous asset to the team. And it's 11. The other jersey I would consider buying is number 8. This player wore 23 in the last Super Bowl 2 years ago. And then he switched his number when the Eagles reacquired him this past season to 8 to honor Kobe Bryant. And that would be one Chauncey Gardner-Johnson. Some people might not like Chauncey and the way that he plays, but I sure do. I'm a big fan of Chauncey. I think that he has brought to the team what he had when he was with the team prior for one season. He has a toughness and a the kind of personality that I think really is reflective of what Philadelphia is all about. So I would probably go with either A.J. Brown or Chauncey Gardner-Johnson. And let's be fair. If the Eagles actually win this game, I might get both jerseys. Yeah, treat myself. Who knows? So, anyway, that's my those are my thoughts on that. Now, folks, I do have a question for you. What are you drinking tonight? Now, I can tell you exactly what I'm drinking. And it is Rough Riders, the Big Stick Cask Strength Rye. Folks, this is a bottle I want to tell you a little bit about. It is distilled and bottled by Long Island Spirits, and they are located in Bating Hollow, New York. Their distillery is on the North Fork of Long Island, New York, right in the middle, essentially, of Long Island wine country. So it's interesting. There's no age statement on this bottle, but it says that it is aged a minimum of 1 year. Well, gee, I hope it's at least 1 year mature. But that's what they say. So who knows how old it is, but we know it's probably very young. It was founded in 2007 by a man named Richard Stabile. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. Long Island Spirits. They do factory tours. Maybe next time I'm in New York, I'll swing out there and see what their facility looks like. I got this bottle, by the way. This bottle, I got it for $41.50. You know, we talk about value. I'll tell you if it was worth the price. Now, the bottle I own is from Batch 4. Now, obviously, there's more than one batch, but the bottle I have is from Batch 4. Now, on the site, it says the mash bill for their Rough Rider Big Stick is 95% Long Island cover crop rye and 5% malted barley, but I think that seems to be the mash bill for Batch 1. I'm not sure about that, but it seems to be the mash bill for Batch 1. I had written down when I bought this a couple of months ago that the mash bill for this Batch 4 was 82% Long Island cover crop rye and 18% malted barley. But I don't know where I got that information from. But the fact that I wrote it down, to me, seems to imply that this mash bill was specific to Batch 4. So, who knows? But I can tell you, the interesting thing about the Big Stick is that it is fermented with champagne yeast for up to 12 days. Now, folks, as you know, we talked a couple months ago about fermentation. That's where the magic in distillation occurs. You know, the longer you ferment, the more interesting and nuanced the flavors can become. But the converse of that, the longer you ferment, apparently, you start to lose alcohol. You know, you start to lose proof. So somehow, these guys over at Long Island Spirits have found a way to ferment up to 12 days with the champagne yeast. They call it low and slow, so maybe there's a quality to champagne yeast that retains alcohol proof while enhancing flavor nuance. Maybe. I'm going to ask him that when I go up there at some point. But I got to tell you, the numbers on this, it's right up my alley. It's 60.5, that's 60.5 ABV. That makes it 121 proof. Folks, it's a foolproof, overproof kind of deal. What do I think about it? Well, the nose is pretty spicy. When you smell it, you're like, whoo, I think that smells like 121 proof. But I can tell you, it drinks much softer than it noses. It's actually, there's just enough bite there to let you know that you're dealing with something over 100 proof. But without any of the burn, it's really, really well crafted. On the sweeter side, without being sweet, I like it. I think it's probably the kind of whiskey that I could easily drink neat or in a cocktail. I am going to try this in a highball to see how it does, but I got to be honest, I actually like it right now neat. It's been very good and has not hurt me a great deal. So that is Rough Rider, the Big Stick, their cask strength rye whiskey. Folks, that is the show for tonight. Thank you for joining us. I want to wish you all a happy Super Bowl Sunday for those of you watching the game. For those of you not watching the game, have a happy Sunday regardless. I know I will. And with that, as always, we will see you on the first tee. Cyrus Farmer, this is the Stomp the Tee Podcast.